remember the all about being inspired to kind of get people to do it. I thought it was wonderful. And it's also been it's been an interesting process going over the material and choosing things to share. And I was thinking, in a way, it's quite hard choosing things from a 7-week course. It's almost like being on an intensive retreat and then trying to pick a few things. But hopefully what we've done just gives a flavour of the kind of complete immersion that you get on that journey. So we're going to start with a 5-minute meditation, which is led by one of the monastics at Plum Village, Brother Spirit, which sort of just brings us into our bodies, which is sort of where the course starts. So whenever you're ready.
So let's see if we can just relax our face. We can bring our awareness to our jaws, check in, see how is our jaw doing right now. And quite often the jaw is a little bit locked, it's a little bit tight, so we can just allow it to drop. It's as if you're just about to yawn. And just allow the jaw to be soft, to be open. And it feels very nice. You can notice the sensations around your eyes. Maybe there's a kind of energy of intensity, of focus that's been gathering there. And you can just let your eyes be soft. If you like, you can allow your eyes to be closed. You can check in with your forehead. See if there's a frown that's settled there. And just allow the forehead to be soft, open. You might like to allow a little tiny smile to creep into the corners of your mouth. And then just notice how that feels in your cheeks. It's quite pleasant to smile. It's a pleasant sensation. You can allow that smile to rise up around your eyes. And that feels nice too. And then it's like the energy of the smile is radiating through your whole face. It's very pleasant. Breathing in, I'm aware of my whole face. Breathing out, I'm smiling. I'm allowing my face to rest, to be at ease. And my awareness can spread to my whole body, and the smile can embrace my whole body. And even if there's still a little bit of tension and pain somewhere, it's not alone. It can be accompanied by the pleasant sensation of smiling. I can be aware of my hands, my arms and shoulders. And even if there's some tension, I don't need to try to relax. That might actually make it worse. But just notice, this is how it feels to have these hands, these arms, these shoulders. My awareness extends to my chest, upper back, feeling the movement of the breath. Feeling the movement of the breath in the abdomen, belly rising with the in-breath, falling with the out-breath. From my lower back, pelvis, hips, thighs, knees, calves, shins, ankles. Breathing in, aware of my whole body. Breathing out, I smile to my whole body. to rest. Allowing it to be and eat. What if it's okay in this moment to be me with these feelings, with this body? Even if there's still a little bit of pain and tension, what if it's okay to be with it? To allow it to be there. To embrace it gently, tenderly, with our awareness. Not to try to push it away and run away from it. Just let it be there. Even though there's some discomfort, we can already have peace and well-being with the discomfort. Don't need to wait for it to go away to feel better.
So we're going to give you a flavour of the course, and we'll say a little bit about the sort of the arc, the trajectory that the course takes in a moment. But just to start off, there's a, I suppose it's a publicity video, which really captures, I think, quite a lot of the essence of the course and will give you a sense of the flavour of what the teachings are, who's involved, and how it's presented.
If we look very deeply, we see that we are the earth, and the earth is us.
So when part of the earth is damaged or is hurt, we suffer also.
So I think we all care about the earth, and we're wondering, what can I do to help preserve this beautiful planet?
In this course, we'll be learning a very radical approach getting to the root of the problem. We'll be exploring teachings, insights, and practices that address our very way of seeing the problem.
This is my conviction that we can change the world if we are not able to change in our way of thinking collectively, but we can change in our way of seeing things is very crucial.
Our teacher, Kai Nyahan, since the early 1970s has been teaching about how we can respond to our environmental crises.
We cannot reasonably expect the transformations that we want and need to see out there without your attention and seeing the same transformations occurring inside of us.
We can solve the problems, we'll try our best to solve the problems, but also leave a legacy of joy, of peace, and one of resilience.
If we don't find these pockets of joy, there is no time or energy to do what it is we think we need.
That's correct.
Racial justice, environmental justice, or political justice, all the things, all the work that you're doing in society, if it's not motivated by presence, if it's not motivated by your love, it may not be sustainable.
Injustice is really painful. It's very natural that we feel anger, but we can learn to transform that anger, to embrace that anger, so we can continue doing our work.
This course is designed as a social learning experience, and these group sessions are a key part of it.
The lesson that I learned from the course is that our spiritual strength is a unifying and powerful compass, work and action.
Although this course draws on Buddhist wisdom, we don't need to be a
what is to enjoy it and to get the most out of it.
The two meditators looks and sees and has insight and that moves into that.
I left the course feeling more firm and strong and more guided.
So it's quite hard to try and sum up this course. It was quite intensive in a way. There was a lot of, in the 7 weeks, I think hours of material and practice every week. But I think just a couple of just key things to highlight. It's described as a course for people concerned about the climate and the ecological crisis, but it's actually a course about action in the world. So it applies equally to engaging with any of the sort of problems that we face in the world. So it's not a climate change course per se. And I would say that the insights and the really apply to anyone sort of trying to act for a better world. And I think, as it said in the introduction, it really starts from a place of grief, anger, anxiety, urgency, despair. All of these emotions that we are facing every day when we open the curtains, turn on the TV, be present in the world. And it's really rooted in the Dharma and in turning towards suffering. And that is, in a sense, the core of the course. And it's really thinking about how do we engage with suffering and how do we respond to it. So that journey from inner awareness to outer action is really the trajectory that it follows. And in a way, the sort of focus on interbeing, interconnectedness, is really sort of shifting from saving the planet to something external, to seeing ourselves as part of the earth and our actions as meaningful and enduring. So whatever action we put into the world is there. And then finally it focuses on developing the capacity to act. So there's a number of practices around sort of mindfulness, body awareness, intention, deep listening, compassion, as a way to connect to the present moment, to recognize joy and beauty as motivations to be present and to act, and to free ourselves from our destructive habits, our consumption, our daily actions which are contributing towards the problems that we're part of. So we're going to give you a flavour. We picked out a few of the talks, a few of the teachings. And to start with, do you want to talk about the joy one?
I think we've got just a very short clip about joy, which I love the bits through the course, and I think all the way through the course they keep reminding us that joy is essential, and there's a rest week in the middle, so there's a lot of keeping that very centrally alongside allowing suffering to be present.
In Zen, we can train ourselves to have more agency over our feelings. We can train ourselves how to generate a feeling of joy, and also how to take care of a painful feeling so that we are not victim of that feeling. For many of us, when we think about joy, we may have some resistance to it. We may feel guilty just to think about having to generate a feeling of joy. We may feel guilty about feeling joy. Because the problems of the planet are so big, there are so many species lost, and also so many losing their homes. The planet is burning up. What does feeling joy have to do with any kind of action that needs to be taken to solve all of the problems that we need to solve? We may feel like we're running out of time. There's just simply no time, no room for joy. But actually, we can do our best to solve the problems that we are facing. We can do our best to save the planet. But we can do it and leave a legacy of pain, of sorrow, of anger, of sadness and frustration. Or we can choose to take the same kinds of actions. We can do it. We can solve the problems, or try our best to solve the problems, but also leave a legacy of joy, of peace, and one of resilience.
I think I had the opportunity to windsurf and kite and wing with a young FPV drone pilot named Patrick Lombardi from Italy.
Sounds like fun.
That's not past the course. That's joy, though.
I think the next video is quite a long, I think it's 22 minutes, and it's called Artist, Warrior, Meditator, or something along those lines. So yeah. We're going to watch that, so make yourselves comfortable. And then following on from that is just a very short 5 minute one question in a question and answer session with Thich Nhat Hanh. So we'll watch one after the other.
Home approach as we of service to humanity, to Mother Earth. First energy is the energy of the meditator. And, you know, this is not the kind of meditator that is passive and kind of like, you know, when you think of meditation, you think of someone who's just, you know, finding comfort and finding peace for themselves. But here, the energy of the meditator is one who can have a sense of stillness, a sense of stopping, and looking more deeply at things. So here, it is an energy of contemplation, of reflection. Our teacher has kind of like framed the engaged Buddhism in that way, to have contemplation and action together. That's what the meditator is. It's not just someone sitting on a cushion, but someone who is active, engaged, but in a meditative way, with depth, with profound insight, with love, with compassion, and not out of dualistic ways of thinking. So as a meditator, the energy of a meditator can help us have a sense of clarity. So when we are still, we are less reactive. And we have clarity of what is happening in the room, what is happening with our planet. We are not fooled by misinformation because of our clarity. And this is the power, if you, of meditation. It doesn't, we're not moved too quickly to react to information and news. And when something touches us, makes us suffer, makes us feel pain, we don't react right away. We come back to our breathing. I think you've learned already from this course ways for us to stop, ways for us to calm ourselves, to take care of our feelings, our body. So in our work as an activist or in our work in society, this energy of meditation, of the meditator, can help us have more stillness. And this is the Zen theory. Someone who is like very still. So whatever is happening in our work with our colleagues, with the environment, with the news, we are not too quick to jump from our emotion, whether that's sadness, anger. So this is the kind of Zen flavor. When you look at someone, that's what it means. They're still and they're very clear. Share, it comes from a place of insight. And what is this? The insight, when we can look, we can touch more deeply what reality is, which is not a separation. So a lot of us in our work, there is a kind of a separation, a dualistic way, that there's an enemy, there's and we are fueled by that. And we don't see deeply that we're all victims. So as a meditator, we begin to see more non-dualistically or non-discriminatively. And when we move from that place, it's more cooperative. We have that. We see that they are also, they're doing wrong things, they are causing harm, but they are also a victim. So here the insight is to have that kind of cut through our illusion. And we'll learn more about that as we study the Diamond Sutra. These concepts, these ideas that we have about ourselves and other people and planet and other living beings. And so the energy of meditation can help us have insight that will help us remove. And I think the modern phrase we use now is othering people. Different groups, different people, different ways, and the planet as well, the environment as well, as separate from us. So this insight, when we have time to meditate, can really fuel us, can give us energy. And this is the diamond of a meditator. You know, is what we cultivate, is what we mine for. It's like the diamond is the insight that we have, and it helps us break through. but through our suffering, our pain, and to also see the pain and the suffering in the world, and it moves us to action. So when Brother Spirit and I were at the COP26 in Glasgow, our intention is bring a different voice to the climate justice movement, but also to bring the Zen period, to bring meditation. And here is a very practical element for all the people there, the members, the heads of states, and all the activists. You know, in their work, they also need to learn how to take care of themselves. So the energy of a meditator, of meditation, is a kind of a way of taking care of our feelings, our body, and to have a kind of sense of ease and stillness in the work that we do. For someone who has a stillness and a clarity, they'll be more effective in their work, in their activism. So this is very important. The second energy that we can cultivate and we can allow ourselves to have access to is the energy of artists. And artists is very beautiful. I sometimes see artists as the tip of the flame. They're always challenging the ways that people view things, right? Through their artwork, their sculpture, their painting, their video. And they're always challenging the convention. So the artist is a way of like bringing new life, aliveness into the way we look at the world. And that's why an artist is very dangerous. In fact, if you look at the human history, usually those in power who are not virtuous, they want to take over a place. They want to remove the artists first, and the intellectuals, of course. But the artists are the ones that are like always challenging the status quo. And so what is this energy of artists? It's a kind of a freshness, a kind of joy, a kind of new ways, a kind of unconventional way of looking at things. And we need that kind of energy. The energy of the artist is also the energy of the child, of curiosity, of exploration, of not knowing. And this is very important. And I've worked with children through my life as a monk. And if you're not present with the children, they find you very bored. And it's very easy. If you're not present, they will know right away. And if you start to talk and adult issues, too much thinking, then children will pick that up very well. As we grow older and we mature and so on, we lose that sense of the artist, of the child in us, which is that sense of wonder, a sense of joy, a sense of curiosity. And this is very important in our work, because there's a lot of difficult news, difficult situation. It can really bring a lot of sadness and despair into us. And so we need to conjure up and cultivate this energy of the artist so that we can bring joy back into our life. That when we wake up, we feel alive, even with all the destruction and all the difficulties that our planet, our humanity is facing. This way of engaging the world to bring joy and freshness is very important. And this keeps us from burning out. We can find nourishment if we can cultivate this and access this energy of the artist. Helps us challenge the convention. A lot of things that we accept individually and culturally or the group that we're working with, sometimes we get caught in that. So the energy of the artist is very creative. It's very, it can see in a different angle. This is what we also need in the movements to help better our climate. Also, the energy of artists helps us bring meaning to it, to reinterpret interpret meaning and purpose. You know, the work of an artist is to communicate something and bring new meaning to something that we've accepted as truth, as a status quo. And I feel that in myself, and I feel it in our teaching. And so as a meditator, it goes very hand in hand with the artist. And you see the world in poetry, in poems, very important element. Lastly, we can cultivate the energy of the warrior in us. And we all need this, because to confront, to change something, we need to have courage, because it's not easy. There will be challenges and there will be obstacles, and we will be betrayed, we will lose confidence, and so on. So the energy of the warrior reminds us that we need to keep on our path. And this very much reminds me of our teacher. In his life, he had to really access this energy of the warrior, because he faced many, many challenges. So every time I feel down, I feel how I conjure up my teacher, because I see him as a warrior. He's a monk, very humble, very small, but if you know him closely, you see he is fearless, and he is relentless, vigorous. And this energy of the warrior we have to cultivate, because we have a tendency to give up, and also to undermine ourselves. And we have to be careful of this. So the courage to confront and not give up is very important. Yeah, during the war in Vietnam, our teacher was working with many people to rebuild the villages. And many times after rebuilding, the villages were destroyed, 3 or 4 times. And his students came to him and asked him, you know, like, when is this war going to stop? And it was very difficult. It was very easy to fall in despair. And I had to really come back to his meditator and to look deeply and to use the teaching and to see that even nothing is changing, but you have to really have the courage to like get back up. And I shared with him that even before is impermanent, and we need to continue to build the village. So they never stopped rebuilding that village, because if they did, it would put all of their hearts into despair. So can you imagine that? And while the country is being bombed over and over again, that is intense. You can see his teaching came from his experience of having to rely on these different energy of the meditator, of the warrior, of the artist. And for us, as activists, as people kind of be in the world and work for bettering our society, whatever scope we're in, we need to remember these three energy, the artist, the warrior, and the meditator, and to find balance. And if we're in the area of activists, you know, and working for social change, we might want to take a look. The energy of courage is probably already there. We might try introducing the energy of the meditator, bringing some more stillness, bringing some more care into our body and our mind. So as we work in this activist work, we have that energy, the Zen flavor, the Zen energy. And this is, it can make it more joyful, you know, when our relationship is in harmony. We might not agree with everything that they're doing, but we don't come from that energy of striving and confronting and fighting. Sometimes that is needed, but we come from that energy of compassion, of seeing that they are also a victim. it's through meditation that we can see that. And we don't get caught by the illusion that they are separate from us. They are also Vikram. That is the power of meditation. We don't get caught by the illusion that they are the enemy, they are the perpetrator. No, we are all perpetrator. We are all Vikram. We're all on this planet together. And we've all been, we are all victims of a system that has brought us to this point. We might be scientists in this area, and we might want to give and cultivate and give ourselves access to the energy of the artist to bring more joy, rather than just as a clinical study, very dry and clear-cut, factual kind of, that we can bring some joy into our work and to enjoy our lives as well, enjoy our day. Because sometimes we can get caught with all these facts and information and study, and it can really bring dark energy into our lives and into our bodies and mind. So the artist can bring that aliveness. Because what's the purpose of saving the planet if we don't even enjoy it now? And so this is very important, not to sacrifice the present moment and sacrifice our bodies and mind, because what is the purpose? Because we are also the environment. We are also Mother Earth. So we don't take care of ourselves. We don't take care. And that's how the mess started, because we don't know how to take care of them. Many people who are exploiting and extracting and abusing the planet and other vulnerable places is because they're unhappy. They don't take care of themselves. And they don't see the truth of the interconnection that we all are in. And of course, maybe some of us are meditators. A true meditator is one who looks and sees and has insight, and that moves him to act. So you might ask yourself, am I engaging enough in my relationship? Or am I hiding my knowledge and being involved? So that's something to take a look at. And so remember these three energy, very important to find a kind of relationship, a balance between them. I'll just end here to share a quote from our teacher about a true hero. Life waits patiently for true heroes. It is dangerous when those aspiring to be heroes cannot wait until they find themselves. When aspiring heroes have not found themselves, they are tempted to borrow the world's weapons, money, fame, and power to fight their battles. These weapons cannot protect the inner life of the hero. To cope with fears and insecurities, the premature hero has to stay busy all the time. The destructive capacity of non-stop busyness rivals nuclear weapons and is as addictive as opium. It empties the life of the spirit. False heroes find it easier to make war than to deal with the emptiness of their own souls. You see, in the core, you can feel the warrior. You can feel the artist. And you can see the deep insight of the meditator. And you must remember, this core is right in the heart of a war, of bombs being dropped in the homeland of the Vietnamese people. You see, the birth of our tradition. Barely engage, no fear, but relentless to not become the victim of our own striving. This is the kind of warrior we need in an environmental movement. Someone who brings a Zen flavor, a feeling of joy, of deep, profound insight into the climate movement. is what we invite you to explore within yourself.
We're just going to have one very short video which connects to a lot of this. But yeah, just sort of reflecting this sort of theme of joy, and I love that quote of how something along the lines of how can you be thinking about the future if you can't enjoy the present, feels like really key. This just struck us as a really powerful moment. We thought we'd share it.
My question is about hope.
Can everyone hear?
I've been working on myself for a number of years now, and my heart is still closed, and I believe it's because I'm very afraid when I look at the world around me, and I see the pain and the fear and the anger in my society, in my family, in the students that I teach, and in myself. Even now, here at this beautiful retreat, and your perspective is very valuable to me. I wonder, do you ever contemplate the future of the human race and our planet? Do you believe that we can, the work we are doing, can save the world?
I believe that as I see it, the future is made of the present. The future is made of one substance, the present. So when you look at the present, you can see already the future. The things that are impermanent, we can change. And first of all, we have to change ourselves. And if personally we can do our best, and that gives us a lot of peace already, because the future of the world doesn't depend solely on one person, but you have done your part and you have peace. We know that civilizations have been destroyed several times on Earth, and our civilization may be destroyed in a few hundred years or less. So that is not something very new, and the human race can be wiped out. And Mother Earth will have to wait for many million years in order to bring us out again. That is possible. For us, 10 years, 30 years are very long, and we have the feeling of running out of time. And for Mother Earth, her notion of time is different. If they did, she can wait 100 million years. And that is why we have to learn to accept that the extinction of many species on Earth, including the extinction of man, is possible. But if man has appeared on Earth once, he, she can appear again. And Mother Earth has enough patience. We have to learn these virtues of Mother Earth: non-discrimination, patience, unconditional love,
So contemplating on Earth, we can learn a lot and we can transform ourselves. And we have to think of time geologically. 100 years, that's nothing. And in the present moment, if we go deep, we can embrace the whole eternity. And if now we allow the scare to overwhelm us, there is no future. And that is why we have to learn to accept the extinction, the destruction of our civilization. And after that, we have peace. And if we have peace, we see clearly, more clearly, and we know what to do in order to avoid the catastrophe.
My question is also about the future.
That was the end of the question. Very abrupt end.
Okay. I think we were just going to spend a few minutes just talking a bit more personally about what our experience of the course has been. I think I was drawn to doing it. I retired about a year ago and I kind of gave myself a year to be not busy and not put too much pressure on myself to think anything, and I've been very aware that the year was coming to an end, and my ability to be peaceful was quite abruptly broken by my mind saying, okay, so what action are you, what are you going to do now? So I've just been quite aware of a kind of incongruity between my sort of thoughts about the world, what's going on, and my feelings, which I think quite often I manage to kind of cut off from. I just don't feel like I'm sort of feeling what I should be feeling, and therefore I'm sort of also not been acting in the way that I felt justified on some level or other. So the course felt like it came at a very welcome time, and I found it really very engaging, and I'd already been involved in the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, but it felt like feels like a very just intense renewal of that practice as well. And it's very broad. I felt like, you know, it would be great for anybody just interested in Buddhist practice. I mind the title because it feels as if I think it probably was designed for people who are kind of a bit burnt out through activism, but it feels like it's become a much broader thing that I feel like anybody could benefit from. And I think the kind of main things the main elements I see of it is the central practice of the earth really being a living being, and that just runs all the way through, and a sort of deep interconnection of that in that practice that I've always loved that about that particular branch of Buddhism. But also I felt very impressed by the sort of psychology, the Buddhist psychology that runs through it, and it feels as if it's just very good at connecting individual and the collective and the kind of intergenerational psychology and sort of collective trauma and how that impacts on all of us, but also the healing of intergenerational and collective and individual healing. And the other thing that I thought was great about it was just the international aspect of it. So part of the course, there's both some sessions that are sort of the whole course can join in, but there's also a kind of, I don't think it is weekly, but my group met weekly of up to about 10 people just from right across the world. So it was just fantastic to share insights and just experiences, and also recognise that people are, you know, doing this across the world. It's been a really helpful thing for me. going to try and sort of say something sort of about my personal insight, but it's quite hard to put into words, but I kind of feel as if it just is a very, very deep, it goes very deep, but somehow it's very broad, so it's almost like it gives you a context for chat. I mean, we have these conversations about is it personal transformation versus activism, and but somehow it manages to bring those together in a way that I don't know if I can fully explain. But it kind of feels as if I haven't got any easy answers about being retired and what am I going to do to be active. But it kind of feels as if somehow I'm working on it in a way. I feel as if there's a path to that, even if I don't quite know what it is.
Yeah. I can speak. It's really interesting watching and listening to the material again. And in my group, which is such a sharing group, so I think there are about 800 people on the course, and we meet maybe once a fortnight. I think there was a live online event, which were really powerful, and then the other weeks we'd meet in our group. And there's a few of us in our group, in the group I was in, who are still meeting. And we were reflecting on what it's like to have finished the course, and actually how sort of the extent of our conditioning is almost like, I've done the course and I should have resolved something, or I've got that now. Whereas actually it doesn't feel like that at all. I feel like I was sort of catapulted out of something that held me into, yeah, nothing's better. But for me, I think the greatest learning or insight or need or longing is actually, I can't do this on my own. It's really about Sangha. It's really about doing this together and not necessarily having answers, but just being in it. And I've really appreciated just the bit of time that we've had together, the three of us. Yeah, because these things are impossible, and of course it's not resolved at all. And I loved listening again to the artist, warrior and meditator, because I think for me that spoke to, I think I was drawn to do the course because I just felt really split in my life of how I could reconcile, on the one hand, a quite peaceful life of meditating, and I lived close to the downs, and with everything that's going on in the world, I sort of, and I think I was feeling a bit numb about it all, I felt a bit guilty, as one of the monastics say, you know, how can I feel joy, and, you know, when there's all this going on? So, actually doing the course, it's really not about spiritual bypass and just feeling joy at all, because it really takes, certainly took me on quite an intense emotional journey of, you know, really living and breathing. The Diamond Sutra is a big part of it, you know, sort of that there is no separate self, that we are the planet, there is no past, present and future in a way. And that wasn't a cognitive, it wasn't just a cognitive learning, it's like every day doing a walking meditation or every day listening to a talk. It's probably about 3 hours of material each week. It's like this complete immersion. And I definitely felt that. I felt that, yeah, there is that separation is less, and something in me did feel reconciled. Not reconciled is the wrong word, but, and it's really hard not doing it anymore because I can't hold on to that, you know, without practicing all the time and without Sangha. And, I'm not sure I'll stop there. I see, maybe I'll come in again, but.
I mean, echoing a lot of that, it is a, yeah, I mean, the sense of coming, I mean, I basically, for 7 weeks, every morning, I came down and spent at least half an hour listening to talks and engaging with the course. And there was a real sense of loss at the end, and actually finding, dovetailing into this group and discovering actually there's a Buddhist action group in Brighton was an amazing sense of continuity. I think my journey was, I think I started very much in the point that they start the course, sort of despair and overwhelm and paralysis, I think. It's this sort of, the bigger the problems in the world, the more my actions need to be meaningful and the harder it is to act because I can't find anything big enough to act on. So it was a really, and I think none of the teachings are new. It's all the Dharma. They're not bringing in anything different, but the sense of the Diamond Sutra that I think what Thich Nhat Hanh was saying there is only the present. So the opportunity to actually be in the present and act in the present, and that's your continuity, and the sense it was really freeing, and it is the sense of being able to, in a sense, the most important thing is to act. It doesn't matter what that action is, but actually to align your action with your values and your practice. I think the other thing, there is this sort of arc in the course. I think I've come out of it sort of being more challenged in a way. So a lot of the teachings around, we have all the conditions in the world to be happy. They talked about deep simplicity. And that's really challenging, actually. And it sort of relates to your point of sort of every level of nice life, but sort of where is consumption coming from? If we have everything we need, why consume? Why are we consuming? And then that connected to the interconnectedness. And there was one talking about the sort of really sort of highlighting, in a sense, sort of the connection between my privilege and another's underprivilege, that we are all interconnected, that and that feels really challenging, that sort of those three things together, the presence, the deep simplicity and my connectedness to the suffering and benefiting from that suffering. Feels like, and it's a journey. Where does it take you? But I think there was a real sort of opening up for me from this course, which I really appreciated. So talking about opening up, we're going to stop sitting.
I was just thinking that actually something did change for me as a result of the course. I didn't just feel catapulted back to the same place that. That whereas before I think I had a slight feeling of guilt about feeling joyful and happy, and that I now see it as it's actually really important to not only allow those feelings in but to cultivate them, and it's the part of our resilience, and that actually the joy and the despair are part of the same thing. And as my capacity for joy increased, actually so did my capacity for grief. That I could sort of hold it all. And in the reflection group that I'm still continuing with, just once a month, we've spoken about, there's something about just the act of being heard, of listening to you, how is it for you? I hear you, how is it for me? That's it. It's not about finding answers or ways through. And that's definitely changed. I feel I can be more present even if it's painful.
That's the point for me. I think it's come on various videos that I think we've shared as well about witnessing, of just being able to be with, whether it be the pain and the joy, and I think you have to balance them, because if you get out of balance, you can't do it. But I think it's about being able to feel as well. I think it's, for me, it's helping me feel.
Mm.
And being and remembering that feelings are really important. I didn't used to think I had them. I thought I was a bit numbed out, but actually realised they are going on. I just need to kind of recognise them in a way.
So we're going to shift a little bit, and we're going to do a walking meditation in the Plum Village tradition, which is we're all going to walk in a circle. And there's a talk that we're going to listen to whilst we are meditating, which is on walking meditation.
Can I just ask if, because what you're saying is actually fascinating,
yes.
I'm just wondering, would anyone else want to comment on what saying, actually, because it resonates a lot with me, a lot of the things you're saying, and the key points that the Course seems to be coming through. Does anyone want to say anything?
Yes. I've got so many questions that I don't know where to begin.
Okay, let's just open it up
but,
a bit of space.
Yeah. So you showed, this is one of them, you showed the video clip of Ty responding to someone who was feeling, you know, really desperate, or despairing about the situation. And I couldn't entirely understand the reply, you know, actually the words of the reply, but I think what Ty was saying was that actually, in our lifetime, there may be no change. This civilization may become extinct, and it may be millions and millions of years before there is a revival of something like it. And then he said, so that's our woman, that's a lot.
Hmm.
And then he said, and if you despair, there'll be no future. I think he said. So I didn't really understand that, but you had said you wanted to show us that clip because it had been a turning point for you, and I wondered what it was about it that you wanted us to take in.
So I think what he said was slightly different.
Yeah.
It wasn't that... it was, if you despair, there'll be no future, but actually the release of accepting impermanence creates the space to actually be in the present and act for which may create a better future. I mean, I think a lot of the message of the Course is things are pretty bad, but there is possibility. We don't know what the future will be, but all we can do is act in the present. But if we're despairing in the present, then we won't act. So I think that was... Is that... Yeah.
Mm. I mean, it was a difficult week, that week. I think it was week four, something like that. Because, the theme were this civilization will end, you will die. I found that really, even though, of course, you know, within the context of the teachings, of course we will all die, of course our civilization will die, but actually sort of, and then the next talk was you will never die, because, you know, whilst on a geological time, you know, this is what will happen, and then on a another time, you know, our actions are our only
continuation.
So, it's. I'm not sure I'm being very clear, but
that's making more sense.
Yeah. Okay. And then the next week was. I think it was something like rest is revolutionary. There was something about just taking time for all of that to integrate by walking, by feeling that, feeling like, gosh, you know, this civilization is likely to And there's a liberation in some ways, but not being attached to...
It reminds me of Joanna Macy's work that I've been doing, The Active Hope, and this, she talks, she has lots of exercises on deep time, which I find very valuable, like you can do pair work where one person's in the future, 200 years in the future, and you're in the present, and then kind of have a conversation. But it can be quite powerful. It sounds a bit odd, but if you get into the role, it gives you a different perspective. And also the other one, which I find really useful, is harvesting the gifts of the ancestors, where you kind of talk everyone, you go backwards, right back to the beginning of humanity on the plains of Africa or wherever it was. And then you stand there and look, and then you've got all the centuries stretching in front of you, and then you start to move forward. And you describe all the gifts, some of them painful, like the war and the trauma, but all the advances we made and all the skills we gained, so that you do this towards the end, so you go home sort of replenished with all these skills and all that our ancestors have done before us. So it's a different way of approaching it, I suppose, perhaps more psychological, but also spiritual. And she puts an emphasis on gratitude, which is also, I think, linked to joy. It's about appreciating what we've got now in the present. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting seeing the different approaches. Mm. I mean, it is very much pure dharma. Mm. Mm.
I wanted to ask about what you said about interconnectedness. Did you, as part of seeing yourself as part of the earth, connection between you and the earth, and therefore violations of one's environment are also violations of oneself. I mean, I get that intellectually, but did you find the course actually make you feel that even more than just theoretically?
I did actually, in the same way as if you've been on a retreat for a week, it's like our perceptions, we become so much more sensitive. And I think that's what I mean about the loss of not being on a course anymore, because my conditioning is so strong, but I'm back in my separate illusion of separateness. But absolutely, I have an allotment, and I mean, at this time of year, I go out and do the same walk across the field twice a day. And before the course and now, it's what I walk there to do the thing and I walk back. And during the course, because I was doing it more as a walking meditation, it was about the walk, and I was very much embodying. You know, I was very, very aware that my foot was touching the earth, and I remember getting there and just seeing a bird and really seeing the pulsation of life in its chest, to the way that I was almost really tearful, and because I think the course was such an immersion, not just on a cognitive level of the sutra, and so there's a real loss in going back to yes, this bird, and of course they're really beautiful, but I think it did, in the same way as being on retreat, opens up our perceptions. And I would, without doubt, do it again, just to keep, because it's actually keeping myself in reality rather than stuck in this illusion that I'm separate. Of course I'm not. And with the walking meditation, like you were saying, partly it's around, you know, sort of, yeah, that there is no, interbeing is a big concept in the Plum Village tradition, so there isn't no separation, but also in terms of time, there isn't either, and so each step, my ancestors are in me too, and my future descendants, and it kind of sounds a little bit not enough just saying it, but definitely on retreat I think that's what we feel, and doing the course, because in a way the course is the Diamond Sutra massive immersion for 7 weeks in different ways. There's this, there's that, but it's all, it's kind of, it's the Dharma over and over and over. Very embodied. So we're going to listen to a talk, and maybe Wolf has, the talk is on walking meditation, and maybe walk as we do it. So in the Plum Village tradition, we walk in a circle, so maybe pushing forward. And so you're very aware of your own in-breath, out-breath, your own rhythm, but also very aware of the whole. So there's this idea that we flow like a river. And really feeling, in a way it's like, embodying all of this in action. It's very, very, very connected to the earth as we take each step. And we'll probably, is it 5 minutes?
It's 4.5 and then have a bit of time off.
And then have a bit of time if people want to use the news or whatever, and they come back, and then we'll come back and have a little bit of group work. So, do you want to say anything else about walking meditation?
Are we going to keep walking after the end of the talk for this place?
Maybe keep walking until everyone's back, and then could one of us ring the bell?
Okay. Self, no separate self or intervene, We can imagine it as being across kind of two axes. Across space, our interbeing with all life present on Earth at this time, and also across time, the access of time with our ancestors and our descendants. We can imagine it as kind of non-temporal existence and our non-local existence. So as we walk, as we eat, as we perhaps take a shower, we can contemplate perhaps our body through time, where it has come from and where it is going, and we can contemplate our body through space. What is holding our body alive in this moment? What is allowing us to be here, breathing alive as we are? And many scientists and activists are already beginning to explore how to bring these insights of interconnection and interdependence into their work, into their collaboration. There is so much for us to explore and discover together.
Is it good? And are people comfortable to go in a little bit longer? So you thought we would end up with some group discussions, moving, actually it was from the last week of the course, and there's a question to sort of move towards action. And a sort of personal reflection. So, shall we move into, how many people are we now? It's like three groups, probably? Yeah. So maybe three groups of...
Three
groups of... Well, we will be part of it as well. So three groups of four? Yeah. So shall we move into the groups and we'll start once people come back from the so there's a very short video, a minute and a half, where they ask the question. At the end of the video he rings a bell. So if you get into the groups beforehand and then just sit for a couple of minutes just reflecting on the question, and then we'll open into groups.
How long will we have, Anton, in the groups?
In the groups?
Yeah.
Like 15 minutes? Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Sounds good.
Okay, so shall we get into the groups?